Here he is, David Holland.
So true. No bias, no spin. Not here. So let's see. Let's get to some important stuff happening with the market.
The fastest 5 minutes in finance with Scott Connor.
Mr. Connor, how are you, sir?
Terrific. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you for asking.
I'm delighted to hear that.
And so there's lots going on. Why don't I let you go first, and then I'll share some things I have.
Well, Monday's trade started off pretty rough. It was giving us a little cause for concern early, especially coming off of Friday's rally. But we picked up off of the lows later on in the day. The Dow down 42 points at 12,967.
That's NASDAQ, really a non-event.
Yeah, non-event there. Some strength in technology. The NASDAQ up 10 points at 29,73. S&P off 3 points at 14,06. In the commodities complex, gold off slightly at 17,48. Oil off slightly at 87,71. Yields on 10s down 3 basis points to 1.663. And it will cost you $1.30 to buy a euro.
Okay, so a little creep there.
Yeah, a little bit of a creep there. So we'll see what happens. We'll keep an eye on it. A lot of news coming out of Europe as they continue to try to negotiate their way to the next wave of bailout payment for Greece. They should have that on December 5th. If they have it on December 5th, I think the market will see that as a good thing. If they continue to hem and haw, then I think that will be seen as a negative thing. Basically, what they're waiting for is for Greece to say, okay, we give in to all your conditions, and here's the proof that we're moving towards them.
Okay, so this is real reform.
Yeah.
No.
I mean, in a European sort of way, yes.
God. Okay, Scott. What else do you got?
Well, lawmakers will be returning to Washington.
Oh, yeah, the cliff thing.
Yep. So hopefully they'll be working on the cliff. Hopefully they have been working on the cliff. I'm certain
they
have.
They're not fooling anybody.
Yeah, I'm not too worried about it. President Obama is meeting with CEOs on Wednesday to discuss the deficit plan. This is sort of an ongoing process. A couple weeks ago, he met with GE CEO and the CEO of PepsiCo. So he's just trying to get corporate America on his side as well.
Does he get them all in a room and then try to like shame them or something into doing something? Or
I have not been invited to one of these meetings.
All right.
I will keep you posted, though. He knows where I work. Knight Capital was much higher. Knight Capital appears that they are going to sell themselves to a couple of different firms, Getco and Virtu.
They have a bad trade?
They've had some trouble. But yes, they are the one of the bad trade where there were a bunch of bad prints and they had to pay all that money back. So they think they can sell themselves for somewhere between $600 and $700 million. And I mentioned strength in the NASDAQ. A number of pieces of tech news. Apple up fairly strongly on Monday's trade. Interestingly, on news that Citigroup has initiated coverage of the tech giant with a buy rating and a $675 price target. You may ask yourself, well, why is Citigroup just now initiating coverage on Apple?
You know, I wonder why Citigroup's just now initiating.
It's an unbelievable mess. They just finally got a tech analyst over there, but they can't keep people, and the people they get are no good, and it's just a disaster. Facebook up pretty strongly after Bernstein upgraded the social network giant to an outperform from a market perform. More market jargon from a, we kind of like it to, we like it a little bit more now than we used to.
They like it enough to put it up 8% on the day.
Price target at 33 there. So it's a pretty good move. They've had a pretty good move since the lockup.
Let me jump in just for a second, Scott, because you're talking a lot about tech. And, you know, it wasn't long ago I saw a Wall Street Journal article that talked about tech being near correction territory. So did they do a pullback and went to a full-blown correction or what?
They did not reach correction territory.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, 5% is kind of what we consider to be a pullback.
Yeah.
10% is a correction, and then 20% is a bear.
That's right. Now, those are numbers that have all sort of been arbitrarily assigned, and none of them really mean anything. Down 20% means it's down 20%. That's really all.
Okay.
Yahoo up after Goldman Sachs said they were going to put the company on its conviction buy list and up the price target to $24, a pretty good move from Yahoo. That's actually the best share price they've seen in several years.
A conviction buy, so that's better than just say, hey, I really like this.
They have a list of conviction buys.
This sounds like, you know, like Shades of Gray
It's a total, just a big old batch of nonsense. Here's a little bit more for you. Research in Motion was upgraded to a sector outperformer from a sector underperformer at CIBC World Markets. There's no standardization.
We like them. They're good, but if we put them with everybody else, then not so good. So you got to compare them to other companies that do exactly the same thing.
Yeah, and there's no standardized language or terminology or rating system. systems or anything. So one company's buy might be another company's outperform. One company's hold might be another company's sell. You have to take all these ratings with a tremendous grain of salt, including whether or not they're involved in investment banking, who knows who on which boards, and so on. So, I mean, it's all interesting fodder, and it has a tendency to move markets for short terms, but the analyst ratings are moderately useful at best.
They don't, I mean, at the end of the day, which of course is one of the most overused cliches, but at the end of the day, fundamentals, the stock valuation, all of that is based on the company's growth, its revenue, and its bottom line.
Yeah, the market is still a discounter of cash flows, yes.
Okay. All right. Well, let's not discount the need to take a quick break, and we'll come back and continue with more from Scott. Stay right there.
Have you noticed most of the financial literature available is either so specific it doesn't apply or too generic to answer even the most basic questions? This revelation inspired David Holland to write his first two books, Confessions of a Financial Planner, Secrets to a Secure Retirement, and How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Financial Scams. These how-to guides contain easily accessible information on a wide variety of topics concerning personal finances. An effortless weekend read. You'll find clarification on what a mutual fund is, how to choose the right financial professional, and much more. Call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN to request a free excerpt from David's first book, Secrets to a Secure Retirement. The number again is 888-747-7526. Or visit davidholland.com for more information on this innovative book series.
Now it's time for a breakdown from Finglish to English.
Yes, we're breaking it down, and you actually had a couple more stories, Scott, but let me just break this up a little bit and throw a couple I had. I wanted to ask you about Mary Shapiro.
Yeah, stepping
leading.
Down. Mm-hmm.
She's stepping down as the head of the SEC, Securities and Exchange Commission, not the Southeastern Conference where my football friends.
Mm-hmm.
And she's leaving, and she's got there's another person that the president is appointing, Elise Walter. And the thinking is that may somehow play into something that clients and investors could care very little about, but us advisors do, and that's whether or not advisors are regulated by a different group. It could change the way regulations are overseen or implemented in our country.
Yeah, I think most folks don't realize how regulated we are between FINRA and SEC, and certainly the regulation has become significantly tighter over the last couple of decades, but even more so in the last 5 years or so.
Well, I think there's a clear need for regulation and policing, but if they go too far, then of course it can really start to, well, as everything else, the cost gets passed to the consumer.
Yeah, I would like to see them focus more on preventative measures rather than punitive measures. It seems like every time we see them, they're, you know, closing the loop on somebody, but I'd rather see some more upfront work to maybe weed out some folks that shouldn't be in the industry. I think that might be more valuable.
All right, I'm with you on that one. And the other thing I wanted to ask you about before we got too far is, and you may hit this with your planned prepared remarks, but weak revenue is a new worry for investors ahead of the tape from the Wall Street Journal. I read through that. This was from Monday's Wall Street Journal. And when I look at that, I'm kind of getting the sense that there's a concern that's building that, yeah, publicly traded companies have been profitable, but there is a concern about revenue and revenue expectations.
Yeah, the last two earnings seasons, we have talked at length on this show about how earnings have been pretty good, but revenue is not so good. And what that means is that there aren't as many dollars coming in the front door. The good news is the companies are much more efficient with what they do with the dollars that do come in through the front door. But ultimately, you need revenue growth to sustain a business.
And to also be able to hire, which of course, companies aren't just saying, hey, we're going to hire somebody as soon as we get more money.
Right.
As soon as we have more demand for labor, for skilled workers, for whatever they need, that then they'll hire.
Yeah, and that's really where macroeconomics comes into play. And it does all work down to the discounting cash flow mechanism that we mentioned a minute ago. More people are working. There's more money in the system. It gets circulated more quickly. So, you know, we go on and on about how we need jobs. That's why, because it'll increase revenue to companies. It'll increase profitability. It'll increase the cash value that's being discounted.
And for the non-CFA chartered financial analysts out there, everybody besides Scott listening to the program, discounted cash flows means that like a stock, what was Facebook? It was around $25. So if the stock market is pricing Facebook, buyers and sellers are buying and selling Facebook, basically they're saying it's worth $25 a share, then that's the value in today's dollars of all of the future expected cash flow from owning that stock. How's that?
Good, terrific.
Pretty good, huh?
Yeah, great.
That's my job, Finglish English. All right, so Your turn. What do you got over there?
I have lots of stuff. Black Friday results are in. We had a really massive Black Friday. As you know, it started much earlier than normal, starting at 8 o'clock in some cases on Thanksgiving Day. Merchants raked in approximately $59 billion in sales from Thanksgiving Day through Sunday. That's up from $52 billion a year earlier, spending per shopper up 6% to $423. That's just in that 3 or 4 day span there.
So. Anything on Cyber Monday numbers yet?
Nothing firm yet, but okay. Everything that I have seen anecdotally throughout Monday's trade was pretty strong.
Well, speaking of anecdotal, here is a little poll from Yahoo, which I love to share. Cyber Monday, kickoff of the online holiday shopping season. How much online shopping do you do is the question. And we have, let's see, we got about 30,000 people that chimed in, and 45% said, I shop online for the holidays as much as I can. It's a lot easier. And at the other end, 37% said, I don't do any holiday shopping online. I like to see and touch what I'm buying, and there's a few folks in the middle.
Yeah, about 16% of Cyber Monday sales are expected to be on wireless devices this year.
Now, that's interesting because
it's a pretty big piece.
Now, of course, these numbers are all skewed, as you would expect, because of people that are, of course, taking a survey at Yahoo have a computer, whereas some of the folks that are on the other end, maybe not, but we'll see. So that's my little bit of anecdotal information for you.
All right. Shall I move on?
Yes, please do.
Frank Abagnale, are you familiar with that name at all?
Oh, yeah, I remember him.
Frank Abagnale.
Catch Me If You Can.
He was the subject of the movie Catch Me If You Can. Well, he has really turned his life around from being a con artist and impersonator to now he is involved in advising the FBI, among others, on how to avoid scams and frauds and things like that. And he says that if he were to do today what he did 40 years ago, it would be, in his words, 4,000 times easier to do due to technology.
Wow.
Isn't that something? So he says education is the best approach to protect seniors from fraud. And primarily, he says, public service announcements to point out common scams and explain how to avoid becoming a victim.
That's very good. That's very good. We've done that at the library, as you know, Scott, and I think that the more people understand about how these scams are performed, the better they can protect themselves. Okay, let's take a quick break. We'll come right back with more very exciting stuff from Scott Connor.
What's your dream? Play golf every day of the week? Turn that hobby into a new career? With careful planning, you can make it happen. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your no-obligation consultation. At Holland Financial, we want to help you take the first step towards making your dreams a reality. That number again is 888-747-7526.
And we're back. Hey, Scott, before I let you continue with your next story, let me throw a real quick around the world on the major stock market indices. Let's see. Okay. First of all, do I see any negative numbers for the major indices? We've got Chile. Oh, my gosh. What happened to Chile? They're down about 1%.
You're looking at year-to-date numbers?
Yeah, these are all year-to-date numbers. China still off about 8. And where's the rain in Spain? Spain's down.
That's some good news from China on an expansion of their manufacturing sector last week. So a lot of people are starting to say that the slowdown in China is reaching an end.
So this could be kind of the formation of your U, and they're starting to maybe build.
Could be.
Okay, good. And I started to say, and Spain down just under 8%.
Yes, yeah, so volatile in Spain.
But everybody else, year-to-date's up, including, of course, right here at home, Dow Jones Industrial Average. Even with the pullback we've seen recently, year-to-date up about 6.5%.
Yeah.
And, of course, the broader market index, the large cap, S&P 500, 500 of the larger U.S.-based, domestically-based corporations, even if they have overseas operations, up a little over 12%.
Yeah, and S&P price-to-earnings ratio based on actual earnings, not projected earnings, still about 15. So a lot of ways you could make the case that there still is some upward potential there.
And we're technically still in a bull market, right?
Yes.
We haven't had that arbitrary 20% pullback to make it a bear.
We have not.
We have had.
Not since last year.
Yeah, we did have the pullback and flirted with a correction or time or two. All right. So go to your next topic.
All right. I have a new insider trading scandal for you. This is a big one.
Wonderful.
$276 million insider trading scheme from SAC Capital, Stephen A. Cohen's SAC Capital. He's the founder there. He's involved, although has not been formally implicated yet. He's known as one of Wall Street's more pompous blowhards, I guess you could say. Anyway, one of his traders, a gentleman named Matthew Martoma, had a friend who was a doctor involved in some clinical trials with Alzheimer's drugs by Elan and Wyeth, and apparently was sending information over, and they were profiting to the tune of $276 million. So Mr. Martoma was in front of the judge on Monday and was set with a $5 million bail. So they are taking this stuff seriously.
Yeah, that's not good, but thank God they're working. Yeah, like you said, Scott, they're working on, you know, catching them and bringing them in. And, you know, if it sounds too good to be true, it is. And yep. Just use common sense is what I tell people, because there are folks out there that just, they don't want to work. They want to cheat. They spend a lot of time and energy cheating people, and I don't know why they can't just try to make an honest living, but yep. They don't.
I have two more pompous blowhard stories for you, and then a nice story about a very wealthy, nice fellow. Anyway, John McAfee, are you familiar with McAfee antivirus?
That's the antivirus guy.
He made a ton of money, and he moved to Belize, and then he lost a ton of money. He had several hundred millions of dollars. And then
did he sell the company? Or?
He sold the company, okay. But he had his money really highly concentrated. His value went down to about $4 million. He lived in Belize, still lives in Belize, apparently has been a real thorn in the side of the government there. Well, several weeks ago, his neighbor, another American, Greg Fall, found shot dead in the head. There has been continued strife between Mr. McAfee and Mr. McAfee is on the run now, and he's live blogging, and apparently he's wearing costumes, and he's
Oh, good grief.
It's so bad that the Prime Minister of Belize said that he thought McAfee seemed, and I quote, extremely paranoid and bonkers.
Yeah, I think that'll do it.
Yep, the president of Belize. And then my other pompous blowhard story, Donald Trump wants to be buried on a golf course. He has petitioned the Bedminster Township Committee to consider his application to construct two lots of cemeteries at the Trump National Golf Club in Bedminster, New Jersey. One lot will be about a quarter of an acre and have 82 cemetery plots. The other about 2.5 acres, 942 plots, and the plots are intended for the Trump family as well as lifetime members of the country club.
I thought you were going to tell me that the whole 2.5 acres was just for him. You know, because he needs lots of room.
Half an acre for him and 2 acres for his
And will it have like a roped off, what do they call those? Those like velvet rope that you...
I'm sure it will. Can you imagine the headstone at that particular gravesite?
Oh, boy.
And then my other story I wanted to tell you about, this is really a nice story. A gentleman named Larry Roth, who made billions of dollars in eyeglass business, sold his eyeglass business, and now is a philanthropist based in Long Island, bought a Ferrari F12 Berlinetta over the weekend. The list price for this car is about $315,000. Mr. Roth paid $1.125 million for it, almost four times the list price. The reason it was at an auction to benefit victims of Superstorm Sandy.
Wow.
So good for him.
Good for him.
And this is his third Ferrari.
Well, hey, amen to that. He did it for a good cause, I'm sure. You know, you started to say blowhards. I thought you were going to talk about Buffett. Because he can't keep his mouth shut about taxes.
He was back in the news, yes.
He's back in the news, and it kills me. I think it's wonderful he's been successful as a business person.
I presumed you would talk about him, yeah, so I chose
not
to.
He's the wealthiest man in the United States, or second wealthiest, okay, and like, what, in the top three or four in the world?
Yeah, I think Carlos Slim is...
Yeah, because
he's number one.
He's number one, so he's like number three wealthiest guy in the world.
Yeah, right in there.
And when you have a billionaire, and he's not just a billionaire, he's a 50 billionaire. So you got a billionaire telling allegedly millionaires how much taxes they're supposed to pay and how they're not paying enough. That's like somebody with $1 million telling somebody with $1,000 they don't pay enough. I'm just tired of hearing about it. So there you go. So folks, you got to hear about it too.
I suspect he will continue to hear about it.
I think he just needs something to do, the poor guy.
Yeah.
50 billion and nothing to do. Well, we have something to do. We're going to take a short break and we'll be right back.
There are hundreds of annuities available in today's marketplace. How can you know if one is right for you? Certified financial planner David Holland answers this question and more in his educational booklet on annuities. To get your free copy, call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN. The annuity booklet provides a plain English explanation of the different types of annuities so you can decide if one is a good fit for your situation. Again, that number is 888-747-7526.
And we are back, and I've just got caught up on my computer here. We go. Okay, so I wanted to ask you, Scott, and a big right across the Wall Street Journal, the money section headlines, the fear gauge, you're holding it there?
Fear gauge, yeah.
Fear gauge. So first of all, tell everybody, what's a fear gauge?
The fear gauge, generally when you hear people mention the fear gauge, they're talking about the VIX. And all the VIX does is measure the disparity in prices of options over a certain period of time.
So is it a measure of volatility?
Yeah. So if option prices are really, really volatile, options prices are always more volatile than stock prices because they're leveraged.
Okay. Measure of expected volatility.
Yes.
Okay.
Expected volatility based on the volatility of pricing of the options, because options look ahead. So if you see a lot of volatility there, it tells you, generally speaking, that investors are nervous. There's not much firm direction in one way or the other. And the measurement tool that they use that to measure that is called the VIX. If the VIX is up above, let's say, 20, that's considered to be a very dangerous sort of a volatile market. Right now it's around 15, which is pretty tame, really.
Okay.
So it's one of the indicators that I look at. I look at cash flows in and out of various mutual funds. I look at the P.E. ratio on the S&P, which we mentioned earlier. I look at the VIX. It gives you an idea of what professional traders are thinking, because generally options are traded by professionals more so than retail. And it has been down quite a bit. So we're happy to see that, and hopefully that'll continue.
All right, good. When I saw that across the page, I was like, what is a fear gauge? I was thinking maybe that's some sort of shotgun that a survivalist would have.
But. Yeah, and you can put a VIX on anything that trades futures. So people, when they say the VIX, they generally, it's assumed that that's the S&P 500. But you can have a VIX indicator really on anything that has any kind of derivatives trade attached to it.
Okay, well, speaking of derivatives, what do you say about all the stuff? Is there anything to be derived from drilling with frac water? Here's a new thing. The drillers are figuring out, which I think is actually a significant development. In fact, the Wall Street Journal also thought so, because they did a big write-up on it. And what's happening is they're figuring out now how to use the water that's used with these high-pressure hydraulic pumps to shoot into the rocks or between the crevices and to get the oil out and the shale out. They're figuring out how to recycle the water, which could potentially bring down their costs substantially. It is an environmental impact. One of the reasons why the environmentalists, people concerned about our environment and who are active about it, are against fracking. So this could be a major development, and I like the sound of this because it can keep our energy costs lower or even help us become more energy independent.
Yeah, a lot of people think that efficient fracking and safe fracking and environmentally friendly fracking could potentially be a complete game changer as to who holds the cards in the oil market.
Well, again, they talk about at some point the U.S. could become the greatest producer of energy.
Yeah.
You know, oil and
a lot of that's natural gas. But
yeah, a lot of natural gas. Well, if we can just get the cars to work on natural gas. Yeah, what they said in the article was that while you can't use it for, they can't clean it enough to use it for drinking water, they'd have to have a little sign that says non-potable.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not yet anyway,
but they can use it to frack additional wells, and that could sharply cut the cost that energy companies face in securing and disposing of the water.
Yeah, they are going to have to appease the environmentalists, I think, before they can really make progress.
But I think that's a good thing. I really, in this case, you know, I think that if we can get things where they belong cost-wise, I think that's huge. Speaking of costs, you've got your arms crossed, and I think that means you probably have gone through your list. So I've got one for you, Scott. And this is harkens way back to how you cut your teeth in the financial industry.
Oh.
Yeah. You had mentioned to me at one point, if I remember correctly, that you did some stuff with long-term care.
Cold called.
Okay. Well,
that makes me a veteran.
The calls will be getting colder because women are about to be put out in the cold. How's that? That was pretty good, wasn't it?
Dear.
Okay. So women face higher costs, according to the Wall Street Journal. They had a huge write-up, and I've been telling men and women for a long time to take a hard look at getting long-term care insurance, or at least address this, even if you decide not to get it. At least have it be an active process you go through other than just saying, get to it tomorrow. Well, Genworth, who is one of the big boys, one of the leaders in long-term care insurance, plans to start charging women more when they apply for coverage, as much as 40% more than men. What do you think of that, Lisa?
Not fair. Not fair at all.
Not fair, Lisa says. That's not fair. But here's the Yeah, here's a challenge. They live longer, and as the article describes very clearly, it reflects the risk involved in covering women who are paid $2 out of $3 benefit dollar. So women, of course, there's a couple things going on. As Scott very quickly and correctly said, they live longer. The other thing is that women, very often, that when a man needs some form of care, very often there's a woman at home. He's married very often, and she takes care of him as long as possible before he goes to a facility.
And she often sacrifices her health doing so.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But the woman much more quickly to go into a facility. So what else is going on? There's another factor. Oh, we've also got another issue. A few of the larger insurance companies, Prudential, Financial, and MetLife, both quit selling new policies. That's also going to affect the cost. Also, the fact that insurance companies have been having lower interest environment they've been experiencing. And
for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, and then we're looking at mid-2015 before we expect rates to go up. We'll see. So, and here's, oh, here's another big one. Long-term care underwriting has been kind of underwriting light. The questions aren't as invasive, and they don't do blood work. Well, that's all about to change as well. So if you're on the fence about long-term care, or you want to take a hard look, now's the time. We've been looking at this for a number of people and need to take a look at it, because it is it's going to get harder to get it. One more quick break, says Lisa, and we'll be right back.
Sometimes I know what I want to say, but just can't find the words.
Last week I shouted at my grandson, and I'm not sure why.
I saw my daughter, but couldn't remember her name.
The sooner you recognize the warning signs of Alzheimer's disease, the sooner you can do something about it. To learn more, go to alz.org/10signs. That's alz.org/10signs. A message from the Alzheimer's Association.
And we're back. Home stretch, Scott. I got three more questions for you. All right. Hostess. What's going to happen? What's going to happen to the Twinkie?
I think the final negotiations between the Baker's Union and the company itself have completely broken down, and so they'll go ahead and go through the liquidation process. The Twinkie is not going to disappear. Somebody will buy that brand. It's too iconic, but it won't be made by the same Bakers.
Well, is that really, I mean, obviously you don't want to see a company go under, but is that the worst thing? I mean, they might be picked up, and I did read where somebody was looking at buying them another major bakery, and if they, you know, maybe they'll pick them up, they'll... You know, turn it. Maybe they'll turn them into a nutritious snack that's healthy for you.
Sure, broccoli-filled Twinkies.
Well, speaking of broccoli, let's jump over to the Middle East. Do we see? Is there any potential? That's not the right. That's too loaded of a question, because I know the answer is yes. What do you see happening right now with the impact on oil? I know it could have a major impact.
Yeah, there's definitely some risk premium built into the price of
oil. So?
I think the fair price of oil right now is probably $80 a barrel. We're trading at 88 or so on West Texas Intermediate, and I think most of that is risk premium.
Okay.
But there's always risk premium in oil. That's kind of the nature of the product.
Which is why we need to become more independent with all of this fracking and you know, pipelines and natural gas.
And it does also go to illustrate just how volatile commodities are. You just have to be so careful trading commodities, because the prices can change on one news headline from some obscure part of the world that you never see coming.
Well, that's why you call it the commodities complex, because
it is complicated.
It's complicated. Yeah. All right, last thing I want to ask you about, because I've been seeing a little bit of movement in gold. Is it just overbought?
I think so. I think it's finding its resistance points right in this low mid 1700 range. You know, it wasn't too long ago that everybody was predicting $2,000 an ounce gold. We're a long way from it, and there's no momentum in that direction. But it's commodity, so it could turn around.
Yeah,
tomorrow.
Same thing. Well, if we do see a resolution, okay, and let's say it's within the next couple weeks for the fiscal cliff, we see what we could see a 100 point drop. Or a dollar drop on the gold.
Easily. Yeah. And I think we could see easily a 5 or 10% rally in the stock market.
Before the end of the year.
I think 5% is attainable if they can get this cliff behind us.
All right. I like that, because I don't want to have the cliff. And I think that we need to have some sort of intelligent tax plan going forward. And maybe not necessarily Mr. Buffett's. And we'll leave on that note. Thanks for joining us.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland, and keep up with Scott Connor by following us on Twitter at Real Money Radio.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.